You are now tuned in to the Jags Den Podcast, the official podcast of the Jaguars Wire, brought to you by USA Today Sports Media Group, and also the number one Jaguars podcast on the airwaves.
What is up, Jaguar Nation? Welcome back to the Jags Den Podcast. I am your host, Phil Smith, a.k.a. Phil the Filipino, and we are recording here on a Victory Monday.
Man, that's rare for us, right?
I know. Man, it feels good to be talking to you guys in the middle of a winning streak. So here we are, and of course, I'm joined, as always, with Jacob DeLawrence and James Johnson. Of course, we are from the Jaguars Wire via USA Today. Gentlemen, how was y'all's weekend? How are y'all doing today?
Tiring, but it's all worth it when it's a tiring weekend that resulted in wins, so I can't complain for that reason.
Pretty much what James said. A little tired, don't know why too much, but it was a good weekend, you know. Jags picked up a win, and yeah.
Yeah, guys, it's like we said, it's not too often we get to talk after multiple victories in a row, but we hope to continue that trend. Before we get started, of course, make sure that you're following the Jaguars Wire on all of our site links. You can find us at jaguarswire.usatoday.com, as well as at the Jaguars Wire on Twitter. The podcast is at Jags Den Podcast. You can find Jay at sportsdrawing_Don and Jacob at _JDella, and I am at Filipino, Filipino. Of course, make sure that you're following the podcast as well on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as USA Today's Audio Boom Network. Pretty much if you want to listen to us, you can find us anywhere. And the best way that you can support the podcast is go on iTunes, give us that 5-star review. That would help us out quite a bit. But gentlemen, usually we start off with some quick hits, but we don't really have any to get to. We pretty much just want to talk about yesterday's victory in the Mile High City over the Denver Broncos, 26-24. We got a little Minshew magic. We got Leonard Fournette woke up finally. And then we got the Lambo legend, of course, doing his dance at the end of the game. And we are going to get into all of that here today. Before we start and getting into the topics, I want to go over the box score here. It was a little rough in the first half. Not a lot of action whatsoever. But Gardner Minshew did finish 19 of 33, 213 yards and 2 touchdowns, including a John Elway, Brett Favre-esque scramble on the pocket that ended up in a touchdown to Rock Armstead. Of course, the big story on offense of the day, as I mentioned, was Leonard Fournette coming alive and turning back the clock, it seemed, for 29 carries, 225 yards, including an 81-yard rush earlier in the game. And he almost surpassed Fred Taylor's single-game rushing record, but did not quite get there. Rock Armstead finally got some action. He had 8 carries for 42 yards. D.D. Westbrook led the way as far as receivers, 5 catches, 66 yards. A little bit of a quieter day for D.J. Chark, 4 catches, 44 yards. And then the touchdowns were caught by James O'Shaughnessy and the aforementioned Rock Armstead. In terms of the defense, not a whole lot of action there on that side. Of course, we had Jalen Ramsey sitting out. He did attend the game and did make the flight out to Denver, but did not play, as we all know. Jared Wilson led the way with 8 tackles, along with Quincy Williams, and Trey Herndon got beat all over the field. But other than that, the defense and we will get into Trey Herndon and some of the other things that happened in the game. But, yeah, guys, so looking at this box score, you know, like I said, the first half was a little difficult to watch. And then it seemed the second half, finally things got going, specifically Leonard Fournette. You know, just really looking at it at the top level before we get into our topics, what did you see that you guys liked and what sticks out to you in this box score?
Oh, yeah, man. It was good to see the run game come back to life because even I guess in the first half you could say it was kind of – still, the team was kind of a little bit on the lethargic side, still trying to basically find their bearings and get back on track. But, I don't know what was said in halftime by DeFlippo or Marone or whoever the case may be, but they came out and according to, I forget, it was one of the actual reporters from Jaguars.com. If I'm not mistaken, it was Brian Sexton They said you could just tell, like, they had a fire in their eyes when they came out of the locker room, and they had that look that they were going to turn things around. And that first drive, man, 16 plays, 75 yards. It took up 10 minutes, y'all, 10 minutes and 24 seconds. And, of course, most of that was due to Leonard Fournette, who came to life in that drive. And he had multiple carries throughout that drive. And, of course, the end result was Rock Armstead getting his touchdown. And Leonard kind of talked about that. And hold up. Is that? Oh, yeah, that's my computer with a noise.
Oh, yeah, mine just did that. It's,
I was like, wait, is that mine or y'all's?
For those listening at home, we have the box score open just to double check, make sure we get our numbers right, because we like to be accurate here. And ESPN, of course, has embedded videos that love to autoplay randomly. So that noise that you hear in the background would be me and Jay's computer playing this random clip from the Jags game.
Right, right. But, yes, to continue, Rock Armstead stole Leonard Fournette's touchdown because, of course, Leonard Fournette had to come out in that play. Or was that I think that was the first touchdown that they had. And, that being said, it was good to see Rock involved in this because a lot of people have been asking about him. Like, when are they going to get the rookie some touches, especially with Fournette struggling in weeks 1, 2, and mostly in week 3 as well. So that was good to see. I was kind of curious myself when he was going to get some touches because I was kind of high on that draft pick as he was taken in the 5th round. And then they got another touchdown like 2 drives later, if I'm not mistaken. And that was the one in which went to O'Shaughnessy. By the way, that play call to hit O'Shaughnessy with the double fake routes into the flats was a beautiful play call by John DeFilippo. I guess we could talk on that one day later, but he's done a very good job since getting the job. At least in the first quarter, he's done a good job, especially granted the circumstances with Nick Foles. That was a good play call on his behalf. And just in general, this game was kind of called beautifully, in my opinion. And then, we had some late game heroics. Everybody kind of stepped in, contributed. You had contributions from Didi. You had contributions from DJ Chark. You had contributions from Josh Rambo making the game winner against like 12 mile an hour wind or whatever it was blowing in his face.
Yes. We had a full sighting.
Yeah, man, I was like, oh, it's a blizzard out there almost, basically, minus the snow. But, yeah, man, all around, man, just like a good effort in the second half for everybody to come to life and come together and come from behind and show resilience. That's something, especially kudos to Gardner Minshew, that we wouldn't have seen in the past under Blake Bortles. And that's something that I think people should keep in mind heading forward is that ability that Gardner has given us to come from behind late in games, especially it was the Houston game at first. He almost did it. They were literally inches short from the goal line and winning that one. And then they do it here. So that resilience, which we'll talk on later when we talk about Gardner, was good to see. And overall, impressive second half for the Jags.
Yeah, definitely. Basically, I have the same sentiments as you because I'm just looking at this real quick. This is how you can tell. Well, I don't want to say this is a different team from last year or from years prior, excluding the championship run. But you can tell that this is one of those games where it more or less makes or breaks the Jaguars season because going into half, they were down 17-6.
Mm-hmm.
Many Jaguar teams of the past would have been like, you know what, screw it. All right, let's tuck it in. Let's go home. We ain't got this one. Whatever. That second half, specifically that third quarter, you could tell that the team was like, all right, we're better than this. Let's shake this off. Let's all come out here and fight. And like you said, coming out the gate with almost a 20-play drive that ate up 10 minutes of the whole quarter and was like, all right, we got this.
Right.
That gives you some momentum. So, yeah, this is one of those where if we look back at the Jag season, if they're able to salvage, and let's say maybe they somehow steal 9 wins, we got to come back and look at week 4 against Denver and be like, that's where the things turned and went toward the positive, where the team came together and believed themselves. Like, oh yeah, we got this now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that it was good for them to show that fight. And like I said, like you said as well, they haven't really showed that in the past, and that's something that could kind of spearhead them heading forward. And I mean, another key thing here is they come out of the first quarter of the season 500. And that's right about where most people had them coming out this quarter of the season, regardless as to like which 2 games you thought they would win. The bottom line is they are basically coming out of this part of the season as they were last year, if I can recall. Of course, you know, it was a lot of season left and some things went down and it kind of went all downhill. But look, right now, you got to be happy for the most part about where the Jaguars are heading into the second quarter of the season.
Now, at one point, I'm sitting here looking through the win probability. At one point in the second quarter, almost going to right before the second field goal, the Broncos had a 95% win probability. And I understand you had a whole half of football left. Right. But if you just watch it, like teeters down to 70, 80, 60 for the Broncos, it goes the Jags way when they start making that run. And then it kind of just dips a little back for the Broncos. And then the Jags snatch it away. So, again, this is just showing that the team is able to withstand a fight and is like, all right, look, we're going to go down. We're going to go down swinging. Case in point, you saw the Houston game. So there's progress here.
Yep.
And we probably have the rookie of the year under center.
Yeah. It's been amazing to watch. We'll watch that later. One thing I did want to say, we'll talk about that later. One thing I did want to say is I think it helped. And I know this is your boy, Jacob, but I think it helped that they got Joe Flacco's number as well. I don't know what it is about him in the last three times they played him, but yeah, they just seemingly just they come to life against him, especially like in the second half of the game. And that was the case here. I mean, albeit like he wasn't on the field for the times they were scoring touchdowns. It was their defense that couldn't stop the Jags, but. Yeah, I don't know. Like, they just, it seemed like every Joe Flacco game that they played in as of late, they've just seemingly come back to beat the team or has beat the team handily or whatever the case may be.
Sir, I was in London with some extremely good seats to watch and witness that beat.
Yeah,
down.
I remember that. That so, 44 or whatever it was.
Yeah. Like, it was ugly quick.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. I will say that the Jaguars have Joe Flacco's number. I don't know what it is. I couldn't tell you. Flacco's no longer my problem. I thank Joe for my Super Bowl ring. Should have been two or three. I'm not too mad. I wish you the best in Denver. I'm enjoying my quarterback now.
Quarterbacks.
Oh, yeah, we got Minshew, too. But I'm in Baltimore. I'm enjoying my quarterback. That should have been a receiver.
Because he on my fantasy team. So, anyway, Phil, we digress from the point.
Yeah, I mean, to kind of add to what you guys are saying, it was kind of like the anti-Jaguar game, right? Just like Jacob said, in years past, this would have been a game that said, oh, we're down by 11, let's pack it up. You know, and Jay, you alluded to that beautiful play on the touchdown pass to O'Shaughnessy, and I tweeted this out last night. Blake Bortles would have sailed that thing into the Rocky Mountains, yeah. Man. Like, they would have never found that football. And of course, Minshew just, you know, delivers a dime, and it's just a great play, something we haven't seen from this offense in such a long time. So really, you know, just in them just driving down the field, you know, giving up the touchdown to, you know, really, really quickly to, I think it was Sutland. That's old Jaguars moving the ball down the field and getting it into field goal range. That's new Jaguars. And that's what we hope to see a lot more of. So yeah, it was a great trip for the, great for the team to come out with a victory, and also on the Jaguars, the BCB road trip as well, which that hasn't come up with a victory. Last year they went to Dallas, and then the year before they went to Tennessee. So it hasn't been, haven't had a lot of luck on that road trip. So good for them, and hope everybody had a good time up in Denver. But yeah, so we'll get to the good, and the bad, and the ugly as far as the game. Like we said, no quick hits to get to this week. So. As far as the good, you could even say the great was Leonard Fournette, who finally came to life this season. We've been waiting to see this from him, you know, since all the talk of, you know, of him improving in the offseason and going to Wyoming to clear his head and get in better shape. And there have been moments during the year we have seen the burst we have not seen from him since year one. And we definitely saw that yesterday. And they just had no answer for him, guys. As we talked about before, 29 carries, 225 yards, including that 81-yard game, gain that put them in position for that first score. So, guys, what did you see that of Leonard Fournette here yesterday? That was, you know, just, you know, it made you feel good. What did you see specifically out of him, and why was he able to have so much success against this team?
Hold on. Let me get this one real quick, Jay. How do you rush for 225 yards and not get not hit pay dirt once? One time, you rush for 225 with an 81-yard sprint, and you don't hit pay dirt? Like, one time? That's what I'm really trying to figure out just looking at this. I'm like, okay, 225, 29 carries. He put about 8 every carry, 81-yard burner. Okay, cool. Oh, wait, he has no touchdowns? How does this happen? But as far as why Fournette was able to run all over the Broncos, who have, for the most part, a relatively solid and consistent top 10 defense, it really just came down to blocking and schemes. Like, for once, the Jaguars were actually able to get their run blocking where, hey, we have more blockers than they're sending people, so it's freeing Fournette to find a lane. And I've always said the issue with Leonard Fournette is not so much getting – well, let me phrase this. The issue with Fournette is that he has to find a hole to hit to get out and free, and then he becomes more deadly. Because if you just contain him, he's just going to try to bowl you over in his 5 yards. Fournette in the open, nobody wants to hit that. Or it's really, really hard to hit and to take down by yourself if you're the safety or a corner trying to come in and make a play.
Yeah, ask so. Dawson. I think that was Dawson that made a tackle on him on that 81-yard play.
Yeah, it's not easy. Like, so that's the thing with Fournette is if you keep him bottled up, then yeah, he'll probably get 100 yards just because of attrition. After 4 quarters, you're like, man, I'm tired of hitting him. So it just starts to pile up. Those 2 yards become 5 yards. But once they're blocked and he can pop to the outside or he can cut right through the middle, make a linebacker miss, and he's gone, yeah, that's where Fournette becomes dangerous and deadly. And that's how he was able to run for 225 with no touchdowns. You couldn't give me one touchdown. That's all I wanted. It was just one.
Yeah, like I was saying, I think, again, on the that first drive of the second half, when he ran the 81-yard gain, he had to come out, of course. Like, we all saw him do the hand gesture to the sideline, like, hey, get me out. I need some of that oxygen on the sideline or whatever the case may be. He had to come out. That's when Rock Armstead came in, if I can recall correctly. And, yeah, Rock took his touchdown because Leonard Fournette was on the sideline getting some air or getting a breather, should I say. So, I guess, like, he ran so hard in that first drive, he had to get a little breath, and the rest is history. I mean, look, I guess the rookie won't complain about it. First touchdown ever in a regular season game. So kudos and congratulations to him. That's nice to see some rookie to rookie when you add Minshew into the thing, rookie to rookie connection there. But like Jacob said, yeah, the blocking was better. That was probably the key part of it, albeit they had a lot of penalties on the offensive line, but they still found a way to make it work and make it happen. But the blocking was significantly better this time around. That's been a lot of the issue in terms of these, I guess you could say, the first 3 games before that, is like the blocking just wasn't there. And John DeFilippo said it coming into the week. I'm just paraphrasing him, but he was like, hey, we had to look in the mirror and figure out why we aren't getting success or having the success we want in the run game, and figure this thing out in terms of getting everybody blocked and being more physical and just getting the job done in the trenches, because previously they weren't. So obviously, they, with them paying attention to detail in terms of the run game throughout practice, and kudos to them to like not letting the outside noise distract them. And they really honed in on the run game this week, according to DeFilippo, and got those things figured out for the most part. And hopefully they can kind of continue on and have more success in the run game, because make no mistake about it, this team will only go as far as Leonard Fournette will take them on offense. So that's a good thing to have him into the mix. And that was pretty much it. I think it was more due to the guys getting the job done in the trenches, but they got to get those penalties cleaned up.
Yeah, and that is a good segue into the bad as far as the penalties. The Jaguars had 12 penalties for over 102 yards, bringing them to 35 on the season, and 5 of those came from Cam Robinson, who at the end of the game almost blew it for us. We'll get to that here shortly. And then also rookie Jawan Taylor on the other side as well. So, of course, you know, it's great to come out with a win, but, you know, just those penalties, man, it's just an ongoing problem we're seeing here as far as the, you know, offsides penalties, holding penalties. Now, we know holding has kind of been a huge problem all over the league, but they have finally backed off on that a little bit. But, you know, as far as the penalties, guys, what's it going to take, really? Is it just lack of discipline? What's going on here?
Well, I think, like, at this point, like, because we talk about it every week, it just seems like it's just who they are. It's an undisciplined team, and you got to wonder if it'll ever get fixed under Doug Marrone. And look, that's not to knock Doug, because one thing about Doug is he's been very resilient in these trying times to be a Jaguar coach. You know, he entered the season on a hot seat, and he just keep fighting and keep finding his way to get wins somehow. Loses his quarterback in the second series of the season, the second offensive series, and now he's at 2-2 somehow, some way, with a rookie from the sixth round. But yeah, but in terms of the actual penalties in itself, that's one thing he hasn't been able to get corrected. And he's shown the ability to, in my opinion, Doug Marrone has learned a lot of lessons over time, and he's adapted and changed things and change for the better in terms of learning from those lessons. But this is one thing he hasn't been able to correct. And I mean, I guess you could say it's not him out there, the one that's committing the holding penalties or whatever the case may be. But I guess some of it could boil down to coaching at times, is what I'm saying. A clear example, Cam Robinson getting a holding call on week 3 against the Titans when he was on the backside of the play. You know what I'm saying? Like, the ball was nowhere near you or ran nowhere near you. How do you get a holding penalty in that situation? Those are the kind of things that it's like, oh, man, like, are these guys being coached correctly or whatever the case may be? I know personally when we made the hires, I wasn't the highest on them bringing in George Warhop, who Doug Marrone brought in. Doug Marrone, you know, he was the guy that said, you know, give him credit for that. Warhop coached Marrone when Marrone was a player. And he wanted him in, but when you looked at Warhop's resume, and I think the last place he was in was Tampa Bay, but you look at Warhop's resume, the teams haven't ran the ball all that well, which is concerning for a team that has Leonard Fournette as their featured guy. So, you know what I'm saying? I would have liked to have seen a better position coach at that position, maybe like a Bob Wiley, who was with the Browns, or somebody along the lines of that. I had a list on Jaguars Wire. I forget who else was on the list besides Wiley, but yeah, like, I think like that may be rearing his head now, is the struggles that Warhop has had as a coach, and it's just not translating to the players.
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, all these penalties, I'm kind of looking at it from the Florida State fan perspective, because I've been dealing with the same issue all year. And I hear Willie say, I can't be mad if it's an effort penalty of you just playing too hard, trying to make a play. I can't be too mad at that. But when you start making selfish penalties, then I have an issue. And it looks like a lot of these are what you would quote unquote call selfish. You got holding, which, you know, that can teeter between a selfish and an effort play. But like you mentioned with Cam, holding on the complete opposite side where the ball is nowhere near, that's a little bit selfish, man. Like, just let him go.
Yeah, like, I don't understand that, man. Just he, it's no way like that defender can make the play. And if he does make the play, Fournette's up the field like 10 yards at that point. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got to have the knowledge, the IQ to say, hey, yeah, let me not cost my team this good yardage, especially with how Fournette's been struggling to get the ball going or running, should I say. The last thing he needs is a good game taken back from like you said, selfish penalty.
Yeah, so the way I see it, it may just be this team is a team that is going to give you 6 to 8 penalties on average every week, and you can more or less navigate around that if you, depending upon when they come, so they don't shoot you in the foot. Like, if you're getting called for a holding where you're down by 3 in the fourth quarter with like 5 minutes left and Fournette just broke one for 6, yeah, it's going to completely screw you. But for the most part, these penalties haven't been that impactful across the season. So it's just something we're going to have to accept. Hopefully they can clean it up. It's week 4. I say if we get to week eight, week 10, and we're still averaging 6, 7, 8 penalties, and we're still in the top 5, top 6 of most penalized teams in the league, then, yeah, it's a problem, and it's also probably indicative that we're a team that is going to commit a lot of penalties for better or for worse.
Right. And one thing to keep in mind here now, like, the Jaguars are starting a rookie at right tackle, Juwan Taylor, who leads the league in penalties right now, and I forgot the exact number on that, but, yeah, he's like, I think it's like 6 or somewhere along the lines of that. For him, but bottom line, he leads the league in penalties, which, I mean, you know, I can understand a rookie, yep, is 6, and the next person has 4, which is, I think it's Andre Smith from the Cincinnati Bengals, but I can understand, like, the penalties coming from a rookie, especially in this situation, you know, like, he's going against, like, Von Miller and Bradley Chubb, so, of course, like, he's going to get a hold, or he's going to get a false start, or whatever the case may be, because, you know, he's trying to anticipate or do what he can to stop what essentially is a all-pro and future Hall of Famer in Von Miller and a future Pro Bowler if Bradley Chubb hasn't been to the Pro Bowl already, and I don't think he has. He's trying to stop a future Pro Bowler as well. And typically, look, now, the Jags aren't going to face teams with that kind of a pass-rushing duo in terms of when you look at their schedule, at least I don't think so. None come to mind. They do play some good defensive teams. But, yeah, as you were saying, Jacob, now, if they could get in that 6-7 range, as crazy as this sounds, I'll be fine with that, because a lot of their games lately have been double-digit penalty games. I know they have at least 2 this year. One of them clearly was yesterday on Sunday against the Broncos. And I think the Texans game was another double-digit penalty, and then I think the other 2 were single-digit penalty games. If they could get in that 7-6-8 type of range, I think we could live with that. But when it started getting in the double digits, you know, it could cost you. And in this case, it could have costed them, because the game was only won by, what, 2 points or what it was. And and it was another penalty. I think me and Phil actually talked about this, that could have been Cam Robinson having to be wrestled to his side of the field. That could have cost Josh Lambeau some yardage for the game-winning kick, which is just ridiculous to say in itself. But you can't, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, if it's for the game-winning field goal, you just got to let that go. Whatever was said to you, you got to let that go. And if you want to fight somebody after the game, okay, when it doesn't cost you in terms of a game-winning kick or a penalty or whatever the case may be. So that's another thing, man, like, the Jaguars got to get their tempers in check. As much as I just praised Doug Marrone, that's something that's still that immaturity and that issue is something that just still really exists in the Jags locker room that has never gotten fixed really since he's been the coach.
Yeah, no argument there. But again, this kind of comes back to Coughlin in a weird way. More specifically, the conversation me and you had with Leon Searcy about how Coughlin is positioned as this disciplinarian, but yet all his teams yep. are very much buck the system. Yep. Like, yeah, whatever. So is it really a Marrone issue or is it a Coughlin issue?
Right. And yeah, me and you actually were saying, like, that could, you know, that's something that the front office should, you know what I'm saying, they should put a lot into when they evaluate players. Like, is this going to be a player that's going to be selfish, and is this going to be a player that's going to be disciplined on the field, not just off the field, but discipline on the field obviously could hurt you as well. So yeah, you're right. Like, I mean, they're the one who make evaluations on these teams, on these players, and pull the trigger on them in terms of drafting them. And yeah, that's a very, very fair point.
Yeah, a lot of categories, of course, you want your team to be leading in. Penalties, obviously not one of them. Of course, Juwan Taylor, as you mentioned, is a rookie, and hopefully he will get everything together. But, yeah, that scene at the end of the game, I've never seen someone still so upset after a win as I saw Leonard Fournette, because he was still irritated about what Cam Robinson had done. And I don't know if that's come out about exactly what had happened, but, I mean, who was it that he pushed out of the way? I can't remember who it was.
I think it was O'Shaughnessy.
Yeah, I think it was O'Shaughnessy that he pushed out of the way. Mm-hmm. And Gardner Minshew, mind you, how old is Gardner? What is he, 24? 23. Gardner Minshew trying to calm down Cam Robinson.
Right.
You know?
That scared me too. I was like, oh, Gardner, get out of the way. You might get hurt, bro. Like, you already nicked on the leg already. Like, but, I mean, he was like, yeah, like you said, Gardner was just being a quarterback, being a leader, being a sensible player, trying to like, hey, Cam, it's not worth it, man. It really isn't. Yeah.
All I know is years from now when Gardner Minshew gets that big contract and he buys his offensive line presence, Cam Robinson's not getting one. So we'll see how that plans out, how that pans out in the future. But
that Rolex watch.
Exactly. Or what? Yeah, exactly. Ezekiel Elliott got his O-line four-wheelers a couple years ago when he won the rushing title. So, yeah, I'm just saying, Cam, the quarterbacks get paid. You're gonna want that gift, okay? So just keep it in check. But anyway, speaking of Gardner Minshew, guys, Minshew mania is not slowing down whatsoever. Not here in Jacksonville. Not in the national media where the Good Morning America, Good Morning Football. I believe is the name of the show. Gave a shout out to Bold City Cap, who got get that Minshew T-shirt from DuvalTillWeDieShop.com out on the out on national television. So there is just no the guy is coming for. He wants that Rookie of the Week crown every single week. He's not allowing anyone else to take it from him. And and as Jacob said, if he keeps this up, we might be looking at the Rookie of the Year. But he won 19 of 33 for 213 yards and those two touchdowns. And then the touchdown, of course, to Rock Armstead, guys, the one that everyone is talking about, where he's evading pressure and, escaping defenders and then just finds Armstead in the back of the end zone. That is big time stuff, man. And people talk about it. It was very John Elway or Brett Favre-esque, and it's just to go up into that environment, and in Denver, even though they're 0-3 or now 0-4, that's a hard place to play, up there. Yes. Of course, up there in the altitude, it is they are a dedicated and loud fan base no matter what is going on. And Gardner Minshew, he just continues to not slow down and not get rattled in the under pressure. So guys, talk about the man of the year, again. What is he just continuing to do that's just setting him apart from, other rookie quarterbacks?
Man, for one, he makes big boy throws, man. Like, this is stuff that, of course, everybody's like, he's going to look like a rookie eventually. And he will, at some point. He's going to have a game where he looks like a rookie. But it's just some things that he probably can carry on with them throughout the year. And it's these types of throws he's making and where he's putting the ball. And, like for us as Jags fans, that's a big deal for anybody, but it's alarming. Should I say is a better way to put it. It's alarming to us because we spent 5 years or so looking at Blake Bortles misplaced balls and set receivers up for the kill, if you will, or whatever the case may be, or miss receivers, or like Phil said, chunk one past the end zone. And that's one thing that Gardner has, is that accuracy. He has that that ball placement. I mean, and he came into the league with it, and that's something I've always said, and when watching these college quarterbacks and evaluating them in terms of when they come into the actual NFL, is typically a quarterback that's inaccurate in college, he's not going to get more accurate against NFL caliber defenses or whatever the case may be. He's not going to get better in that situation. Mostly or typically that's not the case. You don't see that happen often. But if you come into this league with accuracy, that is something that can translate. Of course, there's other components that go into that. And that is, getting the ball out of your hand quick and your arm strength and this, that, and the others, other variables that play into that accuracy as well. But Minshew came into this league as what? I think he only Dwayne Haskins was more accurate than him last year or some to that degree. So he had that. He always had that accuracy. And he's, like I say, he's making these crazy throws. And another thing is, like, his receivers are really helping him out as well. Because this, like I said, they are a dynamic group. Like, you got DJ Chark stretching around like he's Mr. Fantastic from the Fantastic Four. You got Dede making heady plays like we saw yesterday. Chris Conley, I think people are underrating how good he's looked. Chris Conley has been, the stats aren't there, but he's made some clutch catches and he's shown some ability after the catch as well. So, yeah, man, kudos to Gardner, though, getting back on him, man. He does look like he can make a push for that Offensive Rookie of the Year. He should be ahead of everybody in terms of the Vegas standings, but Vegas – clearly, with him being from the small market, they got Daniel Jones, Danny Dimes over him, which, what else did we expect? Like, you know, one guy plays for Jacksonville, one plays for New York. So, that being said, man, I'm very impressed with what I've seen out of Gardner, man. And I really can't wait to see more.
Yeah, you say that Minshew's going to look like a rookie at some point, and you're right, he is going to 100% look like a rookie, and I promise you it will probably be against the Titans. It will be the most mundane one game where he's like, yeah, man, you should light this up. Nope. You're going to get that 12 for 42, a buck 25, just looking horrible game.
Well, hey, look, he can never look as worse, as bad as Blake Bortles has against the Titans. That was Blake Bortles' kryptonite. He plays the Titan. Blake could only complete 9 passes, whatever the case may be. But, yeah, I mean, you know what? Just kind of speak on it. Actually, I think if he does have that game, it's going to be this week against the Panthers. They lead the league in terms of passing defense. But go right ahead, my man.
Yeah, see, I hear that logic and I see that logic, but just the way history has played out, that one game where you're like, yeah, they're not finna lay an egg, they go out and completely lay an egg.
That's true.
And Minshew kind of had a pedestrian 19-33. He had a buck 86 once you take away his sack yardage. He had a quarterback rating of 97, so it looks good, but if you like just look at the numbers, you're like, yeah, nothing special. But like you said, he had those plays. He had that scramble. He kept plays alive. Like Phil has said, he didn't airmail one to Rock, so everything worked out well. And, hey, man, might as well ride it while it's hot. You got Sunday Countdown doing bits on him with Uncle Rico. You got Good Morning Football. Everybody and the mama's just loving Minshew and the mustache. And I feel like I say this every time we talk about Minshew. He may have been a steal getting him that late in the draft, because if it wasn't for Mike Leach calling him, he'd be a grad assistant at Alabama. Saban doesn't hire people who don't have an IQ.
Yeah. Yeah, we talking about a future offensive coordinator, probably.
You know? Yeah, so if Minshew wants to, whenever he's done playing ball, if he wants to go coach at a high school, be an offensive coordinator at college level or something, he clearly has the capabilities of it. Because for Nick Saban to be like, yeah, I need you as a grad assistant here, come on. And then Mike Leach would be like, nope. Saw something random, was like, nah, you got to come to Wazoo. So it's there. He has all the tools. Let's just ride this while it's hot. He's making it look good. Also, he has Fournette as a safety net. Hey, what can I say? I just need some more Minshew magic. Also, can we trademark that and get it on a shirt?
Minshew magic? I think James Lofton might. Is it James Lofton from CBS Sports? I think he might sue us for that. I think he was the first one to say that. But then again, if he didn't get the legal documentation on it, that's his fault. So
yeah, I was gonna say, I don't care if you said it first. I beat you to the lawyer's office.
Yeah, it's not right, about right. Who said it first. It's about who said it most recently and with the paperwork.
Yep. I beat you to the courthouse, buddy. I got paperwork.
I got the papers. it's great, man. It's you know, we always talked about for years, like Blake seemed like a, you know, he's a Duval guy. He fits in. You know what I mean? Which was true to an extent.
Beach bar.
But, right, exactly. You know, and we see him at the Ritz, and you know, he hangs out with us. But I mean, honestly, if you really look at it, I mean, I don't have many 6'5". And Blake, Blake's a pretty good looking guy. Okay, I don't have any 6'5" friends that look like Blake Bortles. I do have some friends that look like Gardner Minshew. Okay,
hold on, sir, I'm 6'4" and a quarter. And you're saying I'm not good looking?
So Gardner Minshew.
Okay. That's duly noted. We will replace you.
So Gardner Minshew, I mean, I went down last week at the Mark Brunell show down at Sneakers down at Jack's Beach. And let me tell you, the crowd was crazy. The place was full. I didn't even get to get the picture or get to talk to him because the line was just so long and he had to go. And it's crazy because in that building are Miles Jack and Mark Brunell, and no one even cares. All right, like that's the kind of impact that this guy is having on the city. And you know, we talked about how Jalen was, you know, when the trade request came up, is the most marketable and recognizable Jaguar we've ever had. That might not be the case anymore 2 weeks later after the trade request.
Crazy, bro. This man selling shirts, socks, yeah, you name it, bro.
he's very good, even though he says that he's a little shy and you know, quiet, but it doesn't come off that way. His interview after the Titans game, I thought he did great. You know, he's very approachable. All these stories are now coming out of people that he's talked to, you know, before the game, you know, in the preseason. I saw a friend post a Facebook story. He was actually at one of the local alehouses with some friends watching a game, and some people recognized, or you know, his table recognized him, and his kids went up and asked for a picture with him. He said absolutely. I guess the picture came out a little blurry. The kids were nervous to ask him for another picture, and they ended up doing it. And he said absolutely. So he's integrating himself with the community, which I don't think is very hard for him to do, because I think, you know, with him being where he's from, Jacksonville's very, I mean, we're here in the South. He's very comfortable. He's very familiar with this area. And I think that's just why he's fitting in so well. And the way that he played at Wazoo, you know, just that's why he's not afraid. You know, he's not afraid to sling the ball all over the place, where sometimes you see these quarterbacks come in and they're very timid and they're shy, and you're not getting that from him because he's used to just throwing the ball all over the field, you know. And I think that's
50 times a game.
Exactly, you know, so he's just used to it, and it's great to see, you know, a guy like that come in. And I think he's just very aware that this could end at any point, you know what I mean, because week 11 or whatever, it gets closer and closer, and then we're gonna have to have that conversation. I mean, I know where I feel. If he's still playing this way, you can't put Nick Foles back in.
Nah, I'm with you. You can't. But, you know, is it to boil down to, like, you know, how much power the front office has, maybe, you know, because they're the ones that can make the argument about money. But I wouldn't. I would ride with Minshew if he's playing like he is.
And that's why Philly let him go, right? That's why Philly let Foles go, because they didn't want to pay him all that money to sit on the bench. You know, is that what Jacksonville's going to do?
Good question. We'll have that conversation when it happens. But Jacob, you about to say something real quick.
Yeah, I was going to say, here's the problem with the whole potential issue of, do we go Foles or do we go Minshew? Foles isn't due back for what, another 5 weeks at best?
Week 11 is when he
week 11. Turn.
7 weeks. So 6-7 weeks from now. So let's say come week 11, I don't have a schedule in front of me, but let's just say the team is 6-5. And we sit Foles for week 11 because you give them that extra week. So going into week 12, the team is 6-5, assuming there's not a buy-in there. Do you really want to put Foles back in? I mean, you have to, because this becomes the issue of Kaepernick versus Alex Smith in San Fran. You can't lose your job to an injury, even if your backup is setting the world on fire.
Why you can't lose your job if your backup is? I mean, like, you just, if you the coach, like,
it's,
if you Marone,
it's too,
like,
injury.
I mean, but still, man, if you know what I'm saying, you address that after the season. It's like, right. Hey, you know what I'm saying? Like, hey, this guy's hot right now. We're not replacing you because, you know what I'm saying? Well, I'll put it this way. Minshew's hot right now. This is the case you make if you're Marone. We're going to ride this out. After the season is over, then it's another quarterback competition, and let that be that. I mean, like, and if Foles, I mean, what can Foles say if Marone come to him and say that? But again, like, it's,
I got a Super Bowl. I'm clutching the playoffs,
I guess. But I mean, he's, you know what I'm saying? He's witnessed this before. He was the one that replaced Carson Wentz.
Yeah, and when Wentz was healthy, what happened? That's Foles true. Sat right down on the bench. That's so true. I mean, it's that argument of, am I going to ride the hot hand, or am I going to give my starter his job back because he didn't lose it due to performance? He got banged up.
Right. I mean, if I was the coach, you know, it would be Minshew's job if he's playing well. Now, if he's not, that's a whole nother story. But
yeah, let's assume he's on, like, let's assume he plateaus out and this 19-33, 220 yards is what we're getting basically every week. That's just what we're averaging with Minshew. Do you make the change?
I don't think Nick Foles is much better than that either. If that's what you're you know, if that's the average, I wouldn't. I mean, like, those are Nick Foles numbers or maybe a little bit better. So what's the point in making the change, in my opinion? You know what I'm saying? I don't think, like, Nick Foles is going to be like this, you know what I'm saying, like, much better than the numbers we're seeing out of Minshew right now.
Oh, no, I've never said Nick Foles would ever set the world on fire. So I'm just making the argument of you have a rookie who is currently on a hot streak. We'll assume he's going to have to level out at some point. So when the vet comes back. And also, that's the other factor. Foles is a veteran here. Foles has playoff experience. Let's just assume, again, that the team is in a position where they could be chasing the wild card, because it looks like the Colts might be able to just hold this division down this year, even without Andrew Luck, which is really miraculous in of itself. So let's assume the Jags are chasing a wild card here. Right. Don't you want your veteran that can help win a game?
Yeah, I'll tell you why that don't really mean much to me, having that veteran, because Blake Bortles almost got us to the Super Bowl. That's why I would take the chance with Minshew. I'm just saying, Blake Bortles, let me say it this way, we almost made it to the Super Bowl with Blake Bortles.
Hey, blind squirrel finds a nut every now and then also. A broken clock is right twice a day.
Hey, again, it's just, I mean, we've seen cases where not so good quarterbacks have, you know what I'm saying? And I'm not saying that Minshew's not going to be a not so good quarterback, but, you know, like that whole veteran thing is, that don't mean nothing to me. I mean, personally,
you're right. But here's the thing. Because I feel like a Trent Dilfer mention is coming.
Nah, I wouldn't even think about Trent.
Let me just get in front of it right now and just go ahead and say
Trent. I was thinking like Dilfer. More along the lines of Trubisky. I think Trubisky went to the playoffs last year.
Yeah, but he's carried by a top 10, a top 5 defense. That's my argument I was going to say. Dilfer won a Super Bowl on the back of arguably a top 10 all-time defense. And I could probably make the argument that they're a top 5 all-time. So you're going to need a vet leadership, because this Jags defense, while great, if Jalen Ramsey is gone or isn't coming back to play due to his back or the birth of his child, and we have our buddy Harden out there getting cooked every week, you're going to need a vet that can make a play, especially come postseason. True. No?
True, true. We'll see. We'll see. But I don't know, man. Like I said, if it was up to me, I wouldn't, but.
Oh, no, I see where you're coming from with that.
Yeah, we'll see. But, yeah, Phil, continue, my man.
Yeah, and, you know, of course, and this was a completely different era of Jaguar football, completely different regime. But remember, this franchise has made this mistake before where David Garrard led the team to the playoffs and they put Byron Leftwich in against the Patriots and he laid an absolute egg. And, of course, you know, this is, like I said, there's nothing to do with what's going on right now. But, you know, we just hope history doesn't repeat itself. I think you go with a hot hand. And if it unfortunately does, turn south or go sour, then you have Nick Foles, you know, there with that experience. But luckily we are a ways away from that, and we need to continue to just enjoy what we've got thus far. So, but yeah, of course, with the two goods, we do have a bad, and maybe not necessarily all his fault, but Trey Herndon was just, man, every time he looked up, it looked like he was getting beat. Of course, you know, he had extensive playing time because Jalen Ramsey sat out. Cortland Sutton and Emmanuel Sanders combined for a total of 166 yards and 2 touchdowns on the day, and they were absolutely not shy about targeting and going after Trey Herndon. So, I mean, was this inexperience, you know, a thing, or is Trey Herndon really just get exposed? Was a little bit of both. What happened? And does it have any effect, you think, on what's going on with Jalen?
Well, on Herndon, I mean, like in his case, and we talked about this earlier, Herndon is undrafted. You know, he's a guy that Tony Khan really loved. I know that, if I can recall, like they had a lot of analytics on him about like him going undrafted and how much of a gem he can be because he went undrafted or something along the lines of that. We've heard Doug Marrone rant about him at times, and especially in the summer during training camp. But, you know, this game might have humbled them in terms of their takes. I mean, and in Trey's defense, as I was going to say, we talk about somebody who's undrafted compared to a all-pro, so of course there's going to be a drop-off there. But at the same time, like, I think what concerns people is that Joe Flacco isn't necessarily a guy that you want to have on your resume beating you like that. No offense, Jacob. I mean, but this is...
none taken.
So, You know, like that's just a bad mark to have on your resume in terms of the eyes or the perspective of the fans. So does it have an effect on Jalen? I would like to think probably so, in a sense that the Jaguars know they can't trade him now. I mean, again, who's to say he, even if they keep him, who's to say he's going to play? But that's beside the point right there. But I feel like if they feel like they can get him on the field, they absolutely definitely would try and keep him. And even if they can and they don't get the compensation that they feel is necessary for him, they'll still keep him. And he could do whatever, you know. But, yeah, I think it does affect the Jalen Ramsey situation. The other question, I guess, is whether or not Jalen, if they keep him, which I tend to think they will, if they keep him, will he play? But if he don't, you know, they got a stroll Herndon out there or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, this is directly related to Jalen and directly affects Jalen, because it's real simple. If you're Jalen Ramsey, you just walk into Coughlin and Marone's office and you hand them game film of just Trey circled, and you're just like, really? This is what you have behind me? And you want to sit here and act like this? So we can either settle this out or you get me out of here. Because if you're any NFL team, you realize Boye is still sitting on the other side of the field. You're like, yeah, I'm not touching that. Nope.
Well, are you insinuating that it's about money when you say he need to go in the office or whatever the case may be?
I'm not saying it's money, but I'm saying more so, look, we're going to air this out and we're going to do things my way. Like, it's going to be a power play because Jalen can basically essentially go in and go, hey, look, you can either trade me or I'm just going to sit out the rest of the season. Because if I'm not mistaken, he's reported, he's accrued enough time where that this year counts actually towards a year on his contract. Mm-hmm. So he could just basically be like, you know what, I'm going home. So unless you place him on an exempt list or something, you can't do anything. It just takes all the power that you have or had, and it just puts it all in Jalen's hands, because now you're like, okay, we don't play you, so we protect our investment. That's cool. Now you're just getting cooked every day on the field. Now you look bad on one side of the field. All right, we'll play you. Jalen gets hurt. You just weakened your investment. Now you're not getting anything because he could suffer that back. Something could happen. Not wishing this on him, but we're just playing the odds here. You have no leverage now because Jalen's backup looked abysmal, albeit one game. He still looked bad when Emmanuel Sanders and Cortland Sutton could get 160 yards on you and 2 touchdowns.
Right.
I'm just saying it might be time for a come to Jesus meeting with Coughlin, and Coughlin might need to kind of step into the 21st century and stop being so archaic with how he deals with players and their various personalities, especially when you know you have a loudmouth corner when you came here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if it's more so like a thing where ownership wants to keep him, then like that me and Jalen need to go in Shad Khan's office. And look, now if that's the case, that's the wrong person. It might not go well for you if you got to go in Shad Khan's office, because look, Shad Khan is the owner of Flexengate, and I mean, like, we all know that man has manufactured a lot of bumpers on this earth. He probably goes through like shutdowns and like, you know, this kind of thing happens often with the kind of business he runs. So in that case, right, you know what I'm saying? Like, Shad, hey, he'll throw out the thing like, hey, I got you under contract in terms of your rights. I own your rights right now. If you want to sit out, that's fine. But if I don't get the proper compensation for you, then we just going to have to eat Trey Herndon getting cooked out there or whatever the case may be.
But, and Jalen may do that, because Jalen may pull a Le'Veon and just show up or pull what Melvin Gordon planned on doing. Melvin was going to sit out until he got a contract. And then his people are like, yo, you have to report by this day for it to count as a year played so you can get out of here free agency. So Jalen will be like, okay, cool. I'll show up. I'll play X amount. And then you know what? I just don't want to be here anymore. I got family reasons, and go disappear. And then it becomes a matter where you got to tie it up and deal with the NFLPA and litigation and arbitration and all of that. And I don't think that Khan, Coughlin, or Marone really wants to go through that, because that just looks bad on the potential of trying to attract somebody to come to Jacksonville.
Right. And, well, another thing, too, that I've looked at, too, is, like, if you're Jalen, I don't think that looks good on your. If you want somebody to trade for you too, or somebody to want you when you're a free agent, that don't look good either in terms of either way. You know what I'm saying? I mean, yeah, they teams will take a chance on that, sure. But you know what I'm saying? Like, we're coming, especially like we're coming off a situation, and like I'm not comparing AB to him personally, but like, you know, we're coming off a situation where people like are looking at that AB situation like, this guy has a stench from when he was with the Raiders. Do we need to be the Patriots or whoever the case may be and take a chance on this and maybe get burned as well? Like,
yeah, but that is AB wanting out of Pittsburgh, having no leverage whatsoever, getting traded to Oakland, working out with Oakland and being like, yeah, this ain't it, Chief. And then trying to find every way to get himself out of there, which he went through the playbook of all the options and did it, and then screwing himself over. Right. This is more so a disgruntled corner who had a moment with his head coach, talked it out. It was good with his head coach. From all reports, it's basically been like, hey, the issue wasn't so much with Marrone, why I demanded a trade. Me and him, we talked it out. We had it out. We're fine. My issue was my meeting with Coughlin and the things that he said and what happened there. And now it's like, yeah, I can't be here. So that is less of a problem player, problem child, disgruntled thing, and more of a insulated incident with just one particular person, which the league consensus is he is very archaic, stubborn, difficult, right, whatever words you want to use, not easy to get along with. We've heard this from former players, former GMs, reporters. Leon Searcy has told us this out of his mouth in not so many words, that Coughlin is a very stick to his guns, stuck in his ways, unique individual.
Right.
And Jalen is very much a stick to his guns. This is who I am. I think you should respect me and accept things and update and come to the table, like, understanding. And they just butted heads. And it's like, yo, this isn't going to work.
Right.
Because everything.
I guess I'll just say this, man. Like, if it was the NBA, I'd be like, yeah, he can get out of there. But unfortunately, it ain't. And I mean, I'll just leave it at this. Like, I just think Khan in particular is okay with him sitting. And if, you know, if it comes to that, sitting while being on the team, and if they have to trade, they have to try Trey Herndon out there. But it's me. Yeah. Now, again, if it was the NBA now, I'd be like, oh, he's getting out of there.
I mean, NFL's kind of getting like the NBA. It's a little bit that way. It's starting to trend that way.
Maybe.
Slowly.
Yeah, we'll see. This situation will be telling of that. I think this will show us, like, if they're gearing towards that. I know this next lockout or the new CBA is going to be nasty. I know that for sure, but we'll see.
Yeah, and the thing, what you were saying earlier, Jacob, is as far as Coughlin coming to terms with this is how the way things are. He's not going to. Honestly, he's going to lie out. He's going to sit back on, I've got two Super Bowls. This is how things are going to go. And I hope that ownership has the wherewithal to be like, all right, well, bye. You know, just, you can't, right. You know, you trot out. And you know, of course, it seems like we're picking on Trey Herndon. Like I said, not all of this is his fault. You know, he's inexperienced. Inexperienced, and the Broncos offense did what you expect an offense to do when there's an inexperienced player on the other side of AJ Boye. That's what they're supposed to do. You attack the weakness. So it just emphasizes more what a generational talent Jalen is, because he just eliminates half of the field. He takes it away from the other team. It's, you know, I don't know that Cortland Sutton and Emmanuel Sanders run all over, you know, run free all over us if Jalen's in there. It probably doesn't happen. One thing, though, that I have been reading, guys, just kind of looking into, and I was at the Thursday night game, and then I was, you know, watching, they didn't show him too much in the broadcast, but reading his body language, he wants out, man. It's unfortunate. And of course, he's still going to be a good teammate. But I honestly think this is going to end with him being gone, unfortunately. And, you know, you just hope that we get a good haul. And, you know, the three of us went back and forth on, you know, what we think is possible and realistic for them to get. But Jay, you and I have said it before. I'm not getting rid of him for at least two second round picks. And the
first round, you mean?
Two first round picks. And the report has come out that they already they had denied a trade that didn't involve two first round picks. But my guess is that came from someone like Philly or maybe Kansas City, where I don't want 2 30 to 32, you know, first round right. picks. That's not going to help me.
That's two second round picks is what that is.
Exactly. So, I mean, maybe you move those for something else and, you know, you have a little bit, you know, more draft capital. But look, a guy like this who fell to us, you know, and I was pretty sure that Dallas was going to take him. I mean, I would have still been happy, but mm-hmm. I was pretty sure. I think a lot of us were pretty inclined to think that Dallas was going to take him. And they didn't. They fell. And I was in that stadium the night that they made that pick. Mm-hmm. And as soon as the Cowboys drafted Ezekiel Elliott, that place went nuts because we were like, holy crap, it's going to happen. And, you know, he's been here and he had, you know, the year of success with the team, and the rest of it's been very frustrating. You know, he's a guy that wants to win, but unfortunately I had to see this going, you know, the way that we don't necessarily want it to go, but it's just something that's going to continue to be a topic of conversation, and we'll see if he suits up next week against Kyle Allen in Carolina. And Kyle Allen's been a little inconsistent, but his first game he played well, this most recent one, but they still pulled out the win. So, you know, we'll see what happens next week in Carolina, our sister team, as far as 25-year anniversaries. So it will be interesting to go up there. But yeah, guys, that's pretty much all we wanted to talk about this episode, one of our shorter ones. But like we said, we just wanted to focus on the win, let everybody, you know, bask in that glory and enjoy the win streak, you know, that we're currently on, and hopefully we can continue when they go up to Charlotte. Can we also talk about really quick, just, I don't know if you guys saw the video they released of Doug Marrone in the locker room after the game, but he needs to work on his post game speeches. Okay, or maybe just don't let him speak. Yeah. You know, maybe just don't let him do that and have someone else cover it. But yeah, that was just not very. I wasn't very enthralled by coach's words, but you know, at least they got the win. But yeah, guys, what else you know are we working on, and what do you want to talk about to close out? And we'll head into week five.
Pretty much preparing everybody for the Carolina Panthers, who look to be a very interesting team. I'll probably link up with Tim Weaver, the Panthers Wire managing editor, who actually, I think he may run the Falcons Wire too. But yeah, very knowledgeable dude. We'll probably do some questions, some Q&As. Might get him, try and get him like in some kind of a audio formatted type of deal. If you want to do that, if he has the time to do that, that is. But yeah, it'll be a lot of studying the Panthers. And I guess for today, which is Monday, it'll be more so just recapping the game and looking at some unique stats and PFF grades and what have you.
Yeah, not too much going on over here. Just kind of enjoying a little bit of downtime and just going to see and look at the Panthers and think, can we beat the backup? It's the battle of the backups.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, man. Two backups that kind of are playing. Well, I mean, in Allen's case, I don't know if he's playing as good as Minshew, but they are going into this with momentum, no doubt.
The matchup, of course, everyone was waiting for going into the season, and Kyle Allen versus Gardner Minshew.
You know what's funny about Kyle Allen? ESPN mentioned that coming out of high school, Allen was the number one rated pro style quarterback in his class. Wow. And they're like, yeah, he hit college and he kind of struggled. And I've been watching like the clips and highlights, and I'm like, oh, this kid can kind of ball a little bit. But welcome to Sac City, because you got to see the Jaguars, son. It's going to be a rough day.
Yeah, let's hope Saxonville shows up against Carolina. Of course, we'll have a lot of stuff to preview the week goes on. But yeah, guys, thanks again for joining us for the Jags Den podcast. Of course, you can you know, make sure you follow us at all of our social media sites to get to stay up to date with all the latest Jaguar news. You can find us at the Jaguars Wire, JaguarsWire.USA Today, as well as underscore J Della for Jacob, SportsCoin underscore Don for James, Phil the Filipino, FILIPINO for myself. But yeah, guys, like I said, enjoy the victory. I hope everybody is enjoying Minshew Mania as well. Y'all stay safe. We will see you next time. Jacob, tell them what they need to know.
Miles Jack wasn't down.
Was it a question or was it a?
Yeah, I was like, wait, you asking Phil? Is he? What's going on here?
Miles Jack wasn't down, right, Phil? Was he? Yes, no.
You know damn well he wasn't down.
The referees that ruled him down know that too.